Jeanette Tea Party Podcast. Woo!
Hey!
Woo! You're supposed to say woo.
Ooh, woo!
I'm Lauren, and I'm here with my two super cool co-hosts, Rudy and Lita.
Hello.
Hey.
So how are y'all doing? How was your week, my friends?
I'll let you go, Lita.
Good.
You had a good week? Nothing interesting happened?
No, not so much.
That's good.
You sound kind of down.
No, I'm just tired. My head hurts. I had a, like, big old headache today.
Oh. Those are not fun.
I was all cracked out today. I'm still kind of cracked out. I'm trying to calm down.
Yeah, can you hear that, Lita?
With coffee?
I had coffee, and I've had a lot of energized tea, and yeah. And I'm sick, and I'm high on medication.
Oh, jeez.
She had a five-hour energy, too.
No.
Are you like Hammy from, what was that, Over the Hedge? Remember when he drinks that energy drink, the whole world stops? And he's just
much.
Like, he's just kind of like.
Like everything's in slow motion. Slow motion for me. Slow motion for me.
See? Oh! I told you.
I almost wrecked coming home just a little while ago.
Oh, jeez.
I was trying to turn. I was like, okay, guys, hold on to my drinks. Because we had Wendy's. I was like, hold on to your drinks. And I was turning into the parking lot. And then we have like a little burger ornament in our little
rearview mirror
thingy. So it was hanging. And then it like came towards me. And I was all, thinking it was like a ghost or some kind of demon coming at me.
A burger ghost?
And I freaking screamed. And then I scared Antonio and Emily and almost killed us. And I was like, I don't think I should drive. I'm trying to calm down.
I've never heard you talk this fast before, even when, like, like ever in my life since I've known you.
Dude, I was so jittery today. Like, I legit felt like a crackhead. Like, I was like, what's wrong with me? And my heart was, like, bursting out of my chest pretty much. And my heart was thumping. And I was, like, chugging water, like, every 2 seconds. I was, like, yelling practically on the phones. And I was like, I gotta calm down. It was a lot.
I know.
I'm trying to calm down now. I was like,
Lita, okay. You should be here. It was really interesting coming into the house.
I can hear it because she just kind of does things at her own pace, and it's the first time I've like heard her
all crackhead.
Yeah, it's like we're opposites. I'm like in sloth mode today.
Oh,
like the little sloth from Zootopia.
Oh well, what else happened? I'm gonna be the little, what do you call it, equalizer. Because I feel energized, but I feel chill, too.
That's good. It'll keep us on track.
Yeah.
Because I'm... Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. That's cool. How was your week? Your week's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, my week was great. Thanks for asking. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I'm not even trying to do it.
My week was good. As you both know, I started my internship for school, and... Thank you. It's been pretty interesting. No amount of schooling that I would have done could prepare me for this. I'm not saying it's like really, really difficult or I can't, you know, do it, but it's just different. It's, you know, no sort of training can get you ready to work with people. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't substitute anything for human reaction, like interaction. So, but other than that, it was really good.
I bet. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
Court cases, dun dun dun.
I know.
Like SUV, what's her name? Mila.
You mean SVU?
SVU, yeah. SUV. Did I say SUV?
Yeah.
That's a car. Stop. Okay, anyways, we gotta get on track. Okay. All right, so that's great to hear, Rudy.
Thank you.
I'm glad you had a good week. What else happened to me? I don't know what happened to me. This week was like a blur. But that's it. Yeah. All right, so last week's episode was our first Native American true crime case. If you guys didn't hear, we covered the Ashland Mike case, which I think is a really deep case that you guys should listen to. It's really important. And we kind of want to give more insight to the Indigenous cases and also to the MMIW organization, which those of you who don't know stands for the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. So this group deals with Indigenous cases that aren't really being covered that much by media. So that's what we're going to be talking about in this episode. Now, this organization first started out in Canada with the Aboriginal Aboriginals and the First Nations Indigenous cases that were being overlooked and ignored by, well, like everyone, especially when it came to Highway 16, which is the stretch of highway between Prince George and Prince Rupert, British Columbia in Canada. It's also known as the Highway of Tears. I'll just kind of briefly go over this because it's a whole topic that we can talk about. So along this highway, 23 First Nations border around it. Poverty is kind of a big issue, just like on our reservations here in the U.S. So, you know, people don't really have adequate transportation and like everybody was hitchhiking along this route. So starting in 1969 to 2006, 9 Aboriginal women were either found murdered or missing along this stretch of road. Then a year later, in fall of 2007, they expanded their search along that highway and the number went up to 18. Now, there's a debate exactly how much there are. Some believe it to be up into their 30s or even more. And according to the Canadian Encyclopedia, quote, Indigenous groups argue that this number is misleading because it reflects only the disappearances and murders that have happened in the specific geographic areas around these highways, and that the real number in northern British Columbia exceeds 40, end quote. No new cases have been added since then, but there are women and girls still end up missing to this day. In 2006, there was a Highway of Tears symposium that recommended a shuttle for this highway. This was also where families were telling their stories and remembering the victims. This report made 33 recommendations in victim prevention, emergency planning, team response, victim family counseling and support, community development and support. And only a few of these recommendations were implemented. Like over 10 years later, there is now more public transportation along these routes. So Carol Bennett, who is now the Federal Minister of the Crown Indigenous Relations of Canada, said that the national number of murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls is likely over 1,200. That's insane. Mm-hmm. In 2016, there was a national inquiry about this, but prior to this, they had to petition and hold rallies and all these things to try to spread public awareness because the Canadian government wasn't really taking these issues seriously, saying it was just like an Aboriginal issue and not a Canadian issue, which is just more of that BS jurisdictional circles. So common in a lot of Indigenous cases, like last week with the whole jurisdictional maze they went through. So the Indigenous people were sick and tired of not being taken seriously, so they took things in their own hands pretty much to spread awareness, much like here on our reservations. So that's kind of how the MMIW organization came about. It kind of originated in Canada, and now there's actually a U.S. organization as well. I mean, well, like an official title. And a part of this, that you guys might have seen like those art exhibits of like on social media of like the red dresses displayed or like the red handprint from makeup artists and stuff. This is all part of the red dress campaign. I actually looked into it, how it started. It was first brought to our attention by an Aboriginal artist named Jamie Black, and it serves as a visual reminder of women who are no longer present to memorialize the disappeared. And it's a symbol for the community kind of just to come together and to fight violence towards Indigenous women and girls. And there's also the hashtag No More Stolen Sister movement too. So you've probably seen them on social medias.
Oh yeah.
They're like everywhere.
I think everybody is participating in it and giving their own, you know, putting their own spin on this. I mean, you've had the makeup artist, you know, with the red handprint and...
Oh, didn't Whoopi Goldberg wear that medallion too on the Today Show?
Yeah, uh-huh. And then, you know, jewelry, obviously, beaded jewelry. A lot of that is going around with that. And I think the most important thing that's going on in this is just being able to talk about it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, these sort of displays start conversations.
They're like, oh, what's that?
Yeah, what's that? You know, what is the red handprint? You know, what is MMIW? And then you could talk about it and, you know, educate somebody. That way they just don't see this as like something to just be overlooked or taken lightly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. Department of Justice found in 2008 that when it comes to murder rates, Native women are at risk for 10 times more than the national average. They are 4 times more likely to be sexually assaulted. 10 times more than the national average to be murdered.
Damn.
Yeah, Adela. And according to the FBI database, Native women disappear twice the rate of the national average.
Dang.
In 2000 alone, according to the National Crime Information Center, there were 5,715 American and Alaskan Native cases reported, and only 116 were logged into the Department of Justice database. 116.
So why are these women not being logged in? Like, are they even being reported as missing, or what is it?
It kind of depends. Sometimes it's like messy paperwork. Like sometimes, you know, when you check those boxes of American Indian or Asian or whatever, get miscategorized. Sometimes it just gets lost. Sometimes it's just the manpower. Sometimes people just don't care.
Mm.
And the CDC and prevention reported that murder is the third leading cause of death for Native women. 4 out of 5 Native women are affected by violence. Oh, it's so scary. While I was looking into this, I found this study and I was reading it and I thought it was so interesting. So in 2017, the Urban Indian Health Institute started a study kind of to look into more issues like what you said, like why.
Right.
So it looked into why it was hard to get data on this violence, how law enforcements are tracking and responding to the cases, and how the media is reporting. So the study's main goal was to shed light on the MMIW crisis. And it's a really interesting article. I'll link it if you guys want to look at it. Now, these numbers they gathered in the study aren't entirely accurate. There was some non-cooperation with some of the law enforcements that kind of got in the way, but they contacted 71 cities, law enforcements in 71 cities, and more than 60% wouldn't show that they were tracking disappearances or they gave them compromised data. And they found 506 cases in these areas from those cities, but they suspected that's a big underestimate. And they suspect it's like much, much higher. So out of those cases, 128 were missing Indigenous women, 280 were murdered, 98 were still unsolved, and 29 years old was like the medium age range.
That's like you and my age, Lauren.
Well, that makes sense because like sex trafficking and stuff. Yeah. So Abigail Echohawk, who is the director of this institution, she's Pawnee, by the way. Hey. She says, quote, "Until there is cooperation and better tracking systems at all government levels, the data on missing and murdered Indigenous women will never be 100% accurate, which is what we need to strive for in order to protect our mothers, daughters, sisters, and aunties."
So when you go back up to how much are actually reported in the NCIC database, that's like less than 3%, not even 2.5% of all the missing cases they have. That's just,
it's crazy.
It's just upsetting and heartbreaking.
Mm. There are multiple reasons as to why this is such an epidemic. Like we talked about in our last episode, and also, again, plug, go listen to it. Anyways, as we talked about in that episode, there are a lot of communication issues between the tribal, county, state, and federal agencies, and there's a lot of lack of data and jurisdictional complications that are just messy and time consuming, and it's just like a big maze just trying to work around it with like overlapping authority and laws that determine how a case is reported and investigated.
And funding.
And it just leads to gaps in law enforcement response times and prosecutions. And like the funding, there's lack of resources like emergency services to respond to a situation. And
technology, like different tribal offices might not have the technology, and there's no communication between the agencies. So there's like a lot of, not misinformation, but lacking information that's important, that should be out there, that should be communicated across the board.
Yep. And like before with Ashland Mike, there was no Amber Alert system in the Indian County. And it's just like so vast and remote and rural. I get it right this time? But there is, like Lita said, systematic underfunding and budget cuts with the tribal law enforcement that unfortunately dwindle it down to less than the bare minimum to cover such a big area. The lack of prosecution with the jurisdictional issues, like a lot of non-Native people come to the reservation knowing damn well about these issues and knowing they can get away with it too. 86% of reported sexual assault and rape cases were non-Native men. 86%.
I think it's just them thinking they can come into, you know, these reservations, and then when they've done, when they're done with what, you know, the rape and the assault that they're doing of our sisters, they just leave. They're like, peace out, you're not gonna know that I was here, I have no ties here, you know. Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but the whole jurisdictional tape, even if maybe they would have suspected it was him, the tribal government can't arrest them. Mm-mm. It's so frustrating. You know, racism plays a part into this too, and I'm not just throwing around the race card. Unfortunately, you know, we all know racism and bias still affect us today.
Especially if a lot of these, I don't know geographically, like where the, I guess the Highway of Tears or what you mentioned earlier, how that started. But here, like in the Four Corners area, there's all these border towns. And so you have, for lack of a better description, cowboys and Indians. And yeah. So there's still a lot of prejudice there. So mm-hmm. This could very well play into that too.
I think it's one of the main factors. I don't think that it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I think most of it is having to deal with racism. It's so strange though. So I don't remember. I'm going to have to find it. But I read the study that people today don't see us natives as normal people. Like, they still relate us back to, like, Christopher Columbus, you know, like days. Right, you know.
Living in teepees. Yep, oh, there's still Indians around here. Yeah.
Right. I think racism plays a lot of it. You know, if they don't think that these women are going to be missed, they don't think that these women are important. They mm-hmm. see them as less. They don't think that these families are important, you know, and that their children are important, because a lot of these women have children.
Yeah.
You know, and these children are growing up without their mother and yeah. these without their auntie and, you know, all of these positive, you know, role models that they could have. But it's definitely racism, you know, and I obviously, you know, people hate when people throw around the race card. But if you want to, you know, make some change and you want to get some answers and basically just put it all out on the table, you have to be honest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it also is like they think like how natives are, I don't know.
They have stereotypes of how we are.
Second class citizens. Nobody's going to miss them. They're just these negative people around anyway. They're not productive. They're not,
they're
you
drunks.
Know.
Yeah. You know, they live off the government. The government gives them a check every month. No, they do not. But, you know.
It's like, who's going to miss them anyway? I'm doing society a favor type of mind frame is kind of like.
We gave them a place to stay. Now they're going to. Now they want this and that, you know. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, Caucasian white people that think like this. A lot of people think like this. All sorts of different people.
Yeah.
So.
It's sad. It's 2020 and you think it would have died out by now, but nope, it's still here. And to go with that, there's a lot of, like, underlying tension of mistrust with law enforcement and governmental agencies that go way back into our past.
Broken treaties.
Yeah, ranging from the beginning colonizations of the Europeans and the Spaniards to the Long Walk, the Trail of Tears, to the boarding schools, which really did a number of
which
people.
Which was not that long ago.
No. And now, even to, like, current times, like that freaking Standing Rock protest with that oil pipe, you know, in North Dakota. And all the lost cases in our systems, it's still here. There's a sort of legacy, for like lack of a better word, that was left behind. There's a lot of damage, and that colonizers basically, you know, not only just invaded our lands, but our cultures, our beliefs, our bodies, everything we hold sacred was pretty much just ripped away.
Almost ripped away. We're still here.
Yeah, you're right.
Almost.
Mm-hmm.
The violence. That's freaking awesome if you think about it. Like, everything that our people have went through, yeah. All the obstacles, all the trauma, all the tragedies, all the, like, beatings and abuse and just sadness, you know? And we're here. Even, like, our parents and our grandparents and even some of the little kids still dealing with that today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing.
It is amazing. I'm proud.
Let's just think about it for a second.
Think about it.
Wow.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Okay.
Okay.
Claps.
Oh.
The violence and trauma is still a big underlying factor here. Generational trauma is a thing. And all these ingredients just, you know, merge together. And because of the lack of direction, our cake just comes out lumpy and gross. Like how I cook, basically. Just gross, okay? So my point is that these factors contribute to the question as to why missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls is such a major crisis that people need to be aware of.
So Tribal Access Program, TAP, we're going to go ahead and talk about that. So in 2015, the U.S. Department of Justice launched the Tribal Access Program to help provide tribes access and exchange of critical data across the Criminal Justice Information Services and other national crime information systems for federally authorized criminal and non-criminal purposes. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. This would support tribal efforts to have enforced protection outside the reservation.
Yay!
Yeah! So there are a few other things in this program. For example, like the tribes would be able to keep an eye on gun control, which includes keeping them out of the wrong hands. And also by doing that, by conducting criminal history checks. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yes, really good. Yes.
I mean, I don't know where you all stand on gun control, but if you are a supporter of gun control or you're not, I mean, this is, everybody should be all for conduct criminal history checks, right?
Yeah, like I don't want a freaking crazy ass out there getting a gun. Like,
right.
No.
Right, some unstable person that has run-ins with the law before.
Sorry, that's the politically correct thing to say. Unstable person, not crazy ass.
Or someone that had, like, drank massive amounts of caffeine.
Huh. I wonder who that is.
To have other law enforcement officers off-reservation enforce tribal orders of protection nationwide. Registered sex offenders.
Yes.
Recovering stolen property.
Yes.
Civil courts can directly enter domestic violence orders of protections. So they are readily available for nationwide enforcement. Wow.
Yeah.
They can also conduct criminal history record checks of individuals who were arrested for domestic violence and stalking cases to support court decisions. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's really awesome because, like, again, with border towns, you know how, like, the tribal law enforcement, sometimes what they log into their information doesn't carry over. So, like, border towns, like, if whoever has some kind of domestic violent thing going on, like, if they leave the reservation and they move into the city that's probably 30-40 miles away to find a better job so they can support themselves, that carries over, so that way if that whoever their significant other is stalking them or, you know, tries to hurt them or whatever, and they report it to the police, they see there's a history of it and they're more apt to help instead of just being like, oh, like, you know how they don't treat it as a big deal and just kind of not really do anything about it and just kind of brush it off.
Yeah, you're right.
So it also helps with tribal public housing can conduct a fingerprint-based record check for employees or prospective employees, adult applicants, tenants they are screening for lease or eviction.
Mm-hmm.
So also tribal child protection services can conduct name-based record checks and also fingerprint checks on tribal employees or school employees or even volunteers. And these volunteers might be in connection to an investigation of reports of child abuse, neglect, or exploitation are flagged.
You googling Coco.
Yeah.
You get them sex offenders. Yes.
Also, tribes have the ability to indicate the status of a person, whether they're wanted, missing, endangered, or a sex offender, gang member, or property that was stolen.
And they also determine if law enforcement and jails will process bookings that capture, like, fingerprints and paw prints, mugshots, scars, marks, tattoos, for arrest. And
I thought she said paw print. P-A-W. I was all, what? Are they hunting Yannas too?
Yeah.
Ew, not good. Okay, start over.
No, that was a good one. It keeps it fresh.
Okay.
Keeps it spicy, guys.
Federal regulations say that non-serious offenses like public intoxication, disturbing the peace, and loitering, some things like that, shouldn't be reported in the system. Which I agree. Like, that stuff should be wasted. I mean, wasted, but those are things that aren't as important as serious crimes.
No, I think, see, I disagree, because I think it leaves a trail, so in case, like, they need, like, it shows a history of somebody's criminal past, you know, and it shows where they started out small. Like, say it, whatever the crime is, starts to get more severe or more, like a major type of crime, you know?
Yeah, I think they should have everything on there. I think that would be good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It should show their criminal history, even though it's a non-serious offense. Like, at the time, it might be non-serious, but depending on what their, like, what their current, I guess, the present crime is, it'll show the complete history of it. I don't know. That's just my personal opinion.
I think that would lead to, like, witch hunts.
Oh.
Like you like to do this a lot. Or I see you like to get buck wild and disturb the peace. And you're always loitering around when you shouldn't be. So how come if you can do this stuff, then what makes us think you don't do this stuff?
I don't know. It's a fine line there.
I don't know. But offenses that tribesmen choose to report may include things like domestic violence, mm-hmm. other violent crimes, yeah. crimes against children, yes. sex offenses, financial crimes that meet a specific threshold, and felony crimes. Right now, there are 75 tribes that are participating in this program, including the Navajo Nation.
Yes!
Yeah! Now, one of the things they're working towards is pushing lawmakers to expand tribal jurisdiction to prosecute non-natives who commit violent crimes against tribal members. As of right now, that authority only extends to certain crimes. Yeah. And I'm thinking those crimes are, like, really heinous, felonious, really egregious crimes, you know. But definitely, domestic violence seems to be in there for sure.
Yes.
You know, sexual assault, stalking for sure.
Yeah.
I think this is great because we're going in the right direction of being able to have full access to critical data across national criminal information systems. And this, in conjunction with the Tribal Law and Order Act, is a great way to make some changes. So hopefully we can see some in the future.
Which, you know, I have been seeing in some of the recent cases that we'll be talking about, you know, in our near future, some more true crime time cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. But really quickly, if y'all don't know about the Tribal Law and Order Act, it was actually signed into law by Obama in 2010.
Huh.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool. Mm-hmm.
But this act encourages hiring more law enforcement officers for Indian lands. Yes. And provides additional tools to address public safety needs. And it also enhances tribes' authority to prosecute and punish criminals. It provides BIA and tribal officers with greater access to criminal information sharing databases. And it also authorizes new guidelines for handling, like, sexual assault and domestic violence crimes. So that's pretty cool. And I think that's from, like, training law enforcement and court officers and, like, boosting conviction rates through better evidence collection and providing, like, a more comprehensive service to victims. And it also encourages development of more effective prevention programs to fight alcohol and drug abuse among, like, at-risk kiddos. Drug kids.
Definitely. I think that's so important. That's another topic for another day. But, I mean, it all kind of entwines together.
Yeah.
There definitely needs to be more of the prevention programs.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the children that come in contact or even just start using or drinking, you know, and also that kind of go hand in hand with counseling. You know, yeah. Are they getting the adequate support that they need for some of the things that they're going through? You know what I mean?
Yeah. But this Law and Order Act was really cool. And the fact that the act encourages hiring more law enforcement officers, I think that's really cool because it's much needed. But even though this was signed into law in 2010, and now it's, what, 2020, 10 years, we still need more officers.
Mm-hmm.
And this just shows you even more, like, how desperate the situation is, that even though they made this to get more officers and all this, we still need a lot more.
Right.
So some more bills of stuff. In Washington State, a bill was signed by Governor Jay Inslee to build a relationship between, like, the governmental agencies and the Native communities. It also requires the State Patrol to develop a protocol for law enforcement's response to missing Indigenous people. But, you know, like, after such a long time of cases just being, like, mishandled or ignored, building a relationship and trust between the two is going to take time. But I think it's really cool that they are taking that initiative to try to build that relationship. You go, Washington State. In 2019, the Not Invisible Act came out, and it was aimed at fighting sex trafficking of Native women, which I find is really cool. And that, in conjunction with the other ones, like I said, we still have a long way to go, but they're still making progress. Still trugging along.
You know, it's crazy to hear, like, I don't know, I guess I'm just really naive when it comes to the world of crime and stuff, because when you think of sex trafficking, you think of it happening in foreign countries, you know, like third world countries, and not in the United States, and not to natives, you know. It's just,
yeah,
it's just crazy.
It is just crazy. And like we said earlier, a lot of people go to the reservations to do crimes because they know they can get away with it. What?
You're calm down. You're freaking me out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just passionate about this.
No,
okay?
Your eyes are really wide and you're like staring at me like, do crimes. I'm like, what do you mean? Like,
why
are you looking at me like
I'm trying to breathe. Guys, I had a lot of caffeine today.
Dude, don't drink caffeine for a few days.
I know. This is going to last me like a month. I thought I was going to die. Okay, sex trafficking on the reservation. That is a big thing. Because, you know, over the summer, you see all these memes about, like, the white van. Like, oh, there goes a white van. Don't go into it. And,
oh, that one
like,
on the nap down there memes. In the reservation?
Yeah, and, like, it was, like, picking up kidnapping people, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Sex trafficking.
Yeah,
it happens every day.
You know, it happens in our little town.
Everywhere.
And I'm pretty sure it happened today in where you live, Lita.
Yes,
like,
100%.
I hate being so, like, I sound so cynical, like, it's gonna happen, like, tonight. Like, I hate being like that, but
statistically, it is.
If you're not gonna be like bluntly clear about these things, then it's never gonna get better. You know what I mean? You can't. I'm not gonna sit here and not tell my friends, like, oh, it's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Just go out and about and, you know, don't be aware of your surroundings and walk by yourself at night and get in people's cars when they offer you a ride, right? It's just not safe for you to not at least
be aware
or listen or even, like, look at the news sometimes, you know? You know, this whole, oh, it can't happen to me thing. I'm sure that these women and these men and these children that are forced into sex trafficking probably thought the same thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, just be careful. You know,
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful. And, like, you know those signs you see around town that have, like, you want to make quick cash now? Perfect for young people. Are you female? You want to make money or whatever?
Yeah.
And it, like, has a number. That is sex trafficking. Don't call it. Like, you see them everywhere. Like, when you're stopped at a stoplight and it's, like, on the little post.
Yeah, or ads.
Yes.
Or people on Facebook or wherever making ads, like, I could help you to do this. Are you interested in doing that? Or even, like, these creeps are getting onto your kid's Snapchat. You know, and then messaging, and they're using people, vulnerable people.
Mm-hmm.
Lita, you're probably like, what?
No, it's just like when you think of it, like when you hear the term, like it makes you think of that. You don't think, like, it's 2020, you know, we're supposed to be driving flying cars right now, you know, not worrying about like this.
Getting kidnapped.
You're just trying to go to the store to buy groceries and somebody approaches you in the parking lot and you never know, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could be putting groceries in your car, like, you know, like Lita said, and just get knocked over the head. It sounds really freaking scary.
It does. But yeah, that's kind of all I got for this episode. There's certainly a lot to that we could just go on and on and on, but I think this is a good basis of what, you know, will prepare you guys to keep in mind for our future episodes. We're going to be covering a lot more MMIW cases, a lot of more indigenous cases, a lot more cases that aren't really covered by media. But before we go, I was reading this article the other day. And have you guys heard of the Global Seed Vault?
I haven't, no.
Have you, Lita?
No, not so much.
So let me tell you about it, okay? So it's a protected building/vault that was built 500 feet into the side of this mountain that is located in, I don't know how to pronounce this word, sorry, Svalbard? I think it's
Svalbard.
Svalbard. Svalbard. Sounds like a Pokemon.
Love it. It does.
And it's in a Norwegian archipelago. I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm sorry. You guys know I can't pronounce things. I'm just a res girl. But this word means it's just an area of the ocean that contains a bunch of little islands. Anyways, so it's north of Europe and between Norway and the North Pole.
Wow, that'd be a pretty place.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just imagine? Ooh, I bet it's like nice and like crispy feeling, you know? but like pretty.
So freeze your lady balls off. What are you talking about?
I could wear some like.
Wear some fur. Wear yeah. some Ugg boots.
Right.
Wear your mucklucks.
Yeah.
So a scientist made this to preserve seeds in case of global catastrophe induced by crop shortages, wars, natural disasters, and like disease and like plagues and like what's going on now, pretty much. Just kidding.
Oh man.
So the Svalbard global yeah. seed vault contains the largest collection of seed and plant species. Sorry,
I just imagine like a little Charmander in overalls and a big old like old McDonald farmer hat and chewing on a chewing on a like a little yes! a blade of wheat or something, you know, every time yes! every time you say Svalbard.
Yes. Get it, Charmander. Svalbard. So in case something does happen, they will use the seeds to genetically resource plant breeding. So they could genetically manipulate them to be like more resistant to disease and pests or drought and heat and even like better nutrition.
Wow.
Yeah, and even like just for the history, historical aspect of it.
That's way cool.
Mm-hmm. And it also serves as a backup copy in case the other seed banks around the world samples are like destroyed. So the seeds are sealed in a 3-ply foil package and then they're sealed in a box. And then these boxes are placed on the shelves where they are monitored the temperature and moisture levels very closely. And this helps them keep viable for a long time. So there's a picture of it.
So it, I was thinking like some sort of...
Some sort of like Batman shit.
Yeah, I thought you like had to like go through I don't know
a waterfall.
Why, I don't know why I thought this, like, you know, like in Harry Potter, Lita, where he has to go get that Horcrux. Which one was that?
Yeah, in the last one they were trying to collect all the Horcruxes.
Yeah, where he has to go in like the water. Yeah, I was thinking something like that. I was like, oh, whoa, like that's yeah, this is not go with my idea of, you know, being out there in the beautifulness with my furs. No.
And your mucklucks.
I know. It would look totally weird out there. Like,
who's that weird girl by our seed vault? Yeah, Svalbard.
They're like, that's not even how you say it. I'm like, oh.
Oh, Lauren. Sorry.
You know what? Whatever. I'd be there. That's not that matter.
So now that we know what it is, earlier in February 2020, the Cherokee Nation was invited to place their heirloom crops into this vault.
Really?
Yeah!
They
place 9 samples into the vault, including Cherokee White Eagle corn, which is considered their most sacred corn that they use in ceremonies and culture activities and things like that.
That is so amazing.
That's really cool.
And it also includes Cherokee long greasy beans, Cherokee trail of tear beans, Cherokee turkey gizzard black and brown beans, and Cherokee candy roaster squash. Which,
ooh, I love squash.
Which I'm really interested. I want to try these.
I do too. If you're Cherokee, I need to try those long greasy beans.
Yeah, I want to try those turkey gizzard ones.
Turkey gizzard black and brown beans.
Yeah. So these heirloom seeds are said to predate the arrival of European settlers. What? Isn't that crazy?
That's so cool. You see how resilient we are?
Yes.
You see how resilient we are?
They are the first U.S. Native American tribe to get an invitation to do
That's
this.
That's really awesome. They're
probably not going to be the last either. That is
yeah,
so cool.
Yeah, I just think it's really cool how indigenous tribes are helping secure our biodiversity, preservation, and thinking ahead for our future, you know, in case of crop shortages or like a zombie apocalypse or like, you know, the coronavirus.
I was like, can't say it, girl.
So, yeah, I got this from an article on goodnewsarticle.org. Also, on livescience.com. And you can actually go check out this place's actual website on croptrust.org. It's really interesting. They show like a little tour of the little thing and everything. It's pretty dope, but
dope.
10 out of 10 would recommend to watch it. Sorry guys, I forgot to cite my resources. I'm just gonna slide them in the show notes because there's a lot of words in it. So yeah, that's our episode. Lita, what should our Navajo word of the day be,
Since our topic is missing, murdered, and indigenous women and girls, our Navajo word of the day should be woman in Navajo, and it is Asan.
Asan, yes.
Yep.
All right, guys. I'm sorry I'm so crackhead. I'll try to not drink as much caffeine next time. You guys can follow us on our social medias. Email us if you had stories. We'd love to read like what kind of crazy things you guys have experienced where you cracked out like me at one point? Did you do something crazy? Or even if it's just like a happy, wholesome story, share it with us. Make our day. Do you guys got any other parting words before we wrap it up?
I guess maybe just because of our topic today, just be vigilant and be aware of your surroundings. If you're going to the store, if you're going to walk across the street, just kind of look around. And if you get that like tingly feeling that says maybe you should wait, maybe you shouldn't go, you know, just kind of listen to your intuition and take care of yourself and be careful.
Yes, I'm all about that, listening to your intuition.
Yes, and I know this topic was heavily on the women, but hopefully in the future we can talk about the men that are going missing as well.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm excited for a lot of our upcoming episodes. We have a lot of great things planned, and we're so happy you guys are here listening. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Until then, hagonet!
Hagonet! Hagonet!